good afternoon once again. This is your this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, and soon I will be broadcasting from the His Majesty King Charles III's realm in either London or Cambridge next week. Greetings especially to all of, I have to also include streaming live on voiceofvashon.org to all of those places. Greetings to, in particular this week, to all sailors who sailed in the Coast Guard cutter Glacier. Coast Guard cutter Glacier was an enlarged wind class. She was a one-off ship that was built, of whom only one was built. And over this last weekend, I was a part of a muster of many, many Glacier sailors and their ladies. Glacier had a remarkable history in that she made many, many trips to the Antarctic, also to the Arctic. And because she was a one-off ship, she did not have any sisters. And because she was an enlarged version of the basic wind class hull form, I was the captain of one of the winds, Northwind, my Northwind. Then because she was a one-off and because she was a somewhat larger and more complex ship, she also had some maintenance challenges for her entire life. I'm going to talk, if I have time, a little bit farther on about the reunion and the gathering itself, at which I was one of the speakers. And I will, if we have the time, I will talk about the some of the things that happened during that gathering. But at this point in the broadcast, it remains for me to say that it is always a sense of privilege to me to be able to go to these gatherings, even if there are people there who I did not personally have the privilege of commanding. And this one was held in the Crown Plaza Hotel downtown. And I'll talk a little bit more about it and when we get a little farther down the program. The Abinical list this week has in particular a tragedy in that we lost a son-in-law. The loss of children, whether they are our children by blood or by marriage, is always tragic. The loss of any people that we love is always tragic. But there's an added element to this one. When we lose a parent, in most cases, as in the case with my mother, whose nickname in the family was Toots, when Toots died, she was 95 years old. She had lived a full and incredibly rich and diverse life. And I knew, and she knew, that there was not a great deal of time left. She took a very bad fall, and for the week between the time that she took the fall and the time that she crossed her own particular bar, she was completely out of consciousness. But so this one was by no means unexpected, even for that short time. And we'd had a great run for it together. I've told a lot of stories about Toots on this program. But when you lose a child, this one died from cancer, then you're also losing a potential, a person who has not yet been able to fulfill all of the allotted time that we always hope that we're going to have, whether it's a son or a daughter, son-in-law or a daughter-in-law. And so I always feel in particular that when we lose someone in that generation, the generation that was coming up behind us, whatever generation we happen to occupy, that we grieve that one not only for the loss and the missing of that particular person, but also for the potential, for the things that they could have and would have done had they been able to live their expanded to their expected lifespan. And so my heart in particular goes out to Bill and his family for the loss of their son-in-law. The Queen's funeral was yesterday, and I am going to comment on a couple of things which have nothing to do with whether His Majesty King Charles III is going to be a good king, or whether or not the two brothers were able to reconcile, or any of those things like that. I am going to comment briefly on the way that some of it was covered. I happened to listen in to a program that came from London, and the big topic of discussion in that program was whether or not Prince Harry, the Queen's grandson, and the one who is right now in somewhat bad odor with the family, and apparently with the rest of the world, the subject of discussion was whether he was really singing God Save the King, or whether he had just shut his mouth. Other complaints that it went on too long, that President and Mrs. Biden were put in the 14th row. None of those things are really very important to me. What was and is important to me is that this is a woman who served her country with honor and with distinction her entire life, and that the ceremonies and ceremonials that went with the ending, the culmination of her being lowered into the vault at Windsor Castle. Those are the things that were important to me, and how well all of that was done, and how great the ceremonial was. And one of the things in a royal funeral that I'm always struck by, and this was also struck me with Sir Winston Churchill's funeral, was that the coffin was carried by enlisted soldiers, enlisted men, part of her household guard, resplendent in red ceremonial uniforms. And if you looked at the faces on those young people, you could see the pride that they had in carrying their sovereign to the place where she will be for however long Windsor Castle exists. Long may it be. The other thing that I was struck by was that the coffin was pulled by enlisted sailors from the Royal Navy. If you notice how it was arranged, they had long pieces of line, not rope, line, long pieces of line, especially clean, probably bleached. And each one of those sailors, and there were young men and there were young women, each one of those sailors in the dress uniform for the Royal Navy, a traditional dress uniform, each one of them was bent on to their particular part of that line. This particular ceremony goes back at least to the funeral for Lord Nelson after the Battle of Trafalgar. And if you look at if you look at drawings of the ceremonies that attended Lord Nelson's funeral, you'll see the same thing. That the carriage on which the coffin was carried was pulled by not royalty, not by aristocracy, not by even by officers, but pulled by enlisted people. So I am not, of course, a subject of now His Majesty the King. But I am a strong believer in the monarchy for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. I believe that Scotland belongs as part of the United Kingdom. I believe that England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland should all be part of Great Britain, the United Kingdom. So she has now been lowered into the vault under the deck of the chapel. And all of the trials and troubles and good things that happened during her reign, 70 years, are now behind her and behind us. God save the King. There's a new development in the Bonhomme Richard case. If you are all of you weary of hearing me talk about that, then I am going to continue to talk about it until every single Irish pennant, every single loose end. Irish pennant, by the way, means a loose end. It is not a pejorative term. It is a term that sailors have used for centuries, and it means something that is waving out in the breeze. Every morning when I came aboard one of my ships, I would look very carefully from all the way at the jackstaff forward, all the way to the flagstaff aft. And if the ship was at sea, as I would walk along the decks of my command, I would be looking for Irish pennants and those that I could take care of myself right there, maybe just tuck them in. But if not, send for the bosun's mate of the watch. The bosun's mate of the watch, that's his job to be watching out for those things. So the Bonhomme Richard, Bonnie Dick, that story is going to be a part of your Captain Joe's program from the captain's chair as long as there are Irish pennants, and there is one of them today. The trial for that young enlisted sailor began yesterday, and it began before a military judge. In military practice, under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, for a general court-martial, which is the most complex and most severe of all courts-martial, and that's the proper term, plural is courts-martial, is the accused has the choice of having it heard either before a military judge or before a full court. And that's the proper term, not jury, that's civilian practice, but before a proper court. And that proper court is presided over by a president, the president of the court, the senior officer on that court. Not a jury foreman. And the choice that this young sailor and his counsel, his defense counsel, who, by the way, is a military lawyer, a highly trained and skilled military lawyer, a parenthetical insertion here, he may, if he chooses to, hire and pay himself or herself for a civilian attorney. Almost always, this is not a good thing to do. Because most civilian attorneys come in and they bring with them some of the attitudes that they used in civilian trial practice. Military courts martial do not have much truck with flamboyance or theater. And that is exactly the way that it should be. So this young man has chosen to have this his case heard by a military judge alone and not by a full court. I personally believe that that was a wise decision. I believe that as this trial opens out, and it's expected probably to last maybe 2 weeks, prosecution has a number of witnesses, and certainly the defense has a number of witnesses, because it is not completely clear that this young man is, in fact, the one who did it. And the judge, the military judge, for that is his correct title, will make a determination of whether or not to hand down a verdict of guilty or not guilty. And the standard that he has to reach is the same reasonable doubt standard as applies in jurisprudence all over the world, and has since certainly Magna Carta. So the military judge is going to be listening to all of the testimony, first brought by the prosecution, then by the defense. And if you look at the photograph of this young man, he's painfully, painfully young. I have a grandson who is about that age. I don't know, because I've not read the investigation about the Article 32, which is the preliminary. It's like a grand jury in the civilian world. The Article 32 investigation, which decided that he should be tried by a general court-martial. I've not read any of that material. All I've read is what's in places like the Navy Times, which is the one of the outlets for civilian people, or for military people, in particular Navy, Marine, and Coast Guard people, and for the Naval Institute Proceedings, which puts out a news bulletin every day. But those are all pretty reliable sources, and I am not therefore qualified, and I'm not sitting on the court. I am not qualified to be a military judge. I'm just going by what I've reading so far. So what I am confident of is that this young man is going to get a full and fair trial, and that if he is found to be guilty, that the evidence is presented by the prosecution and could not be rebutted sufficiently by the defense, then that will be the right verdict. What I am concerned about and continue to be is that once the fire got started by whoever or however it happened, it was in cabin country, the commanding officer, the captain. It was his job to make sure that that ship was ready to fight any fire, to take care of any disaster or any crisis that happened in the ship, while she was particularly vulnerable in that shipyard. And that is really clear to me, he did not do. And that is what I have to say about all of that right now. During the last week, I had two wonderful tour groups. I am no longer doing the regular Sunday tours. I'll pick those up again on Mother's Day next year, when we will also have Kite Day. But I had two wonderful tour groups, and one of them was Nine Ladies from Denver. We could make a song about that, Nine Ladies from Denver. And they were ladies who had been friends for over a quarter of a century. And they get together frequently to do things like scrapbook. And I think that they probably chatter, and they probably, I don't know what they do. What I do know is that they were an absolute delight for the time that we had together. And we talked a lot about a lot of different things. We did not just talk about Point Robinson Lighthouse and its history. We talked about a lot of other things as well. And so the leader who made all of the arrangements with me, with Tila, I want you to know, and I know that at least a couple of you are listening because you promised me you would, that what a wonderful time that I had with you. Thank you so much for your kind and gracious letter and the wonderful, wonderful photographs. The second tour group was an extended family. I had donated my services as a tour guide as one of the items to be auctioned off by the Heritage Museum here on the island. And Michael is the gentleman who had the highest bid. He may have been the only bid for all I know. But in any case, he's the one that I who won the prize, and I was the prize. And so we mustered together last week. And again, it was just a wonderful, wonderful group of people. And again, we talked about a lot of different things. And in fact, we got on to the deaths of people close to us. And it turns out that one of the people there had lost her husband at night during the midwatch, although she didn't call it that, in his sleep. So we had a lot of things to talk about. And I came away from both of those times with the cockles of this captain's black heart just aglow with the goodness of people, the interests of people, and how interactions among people, whether they be friends of family rank or whether they be related by blood and marriage, that when they get together in an environment like we were able to provide for each of those groups out at Point Robinson, so just some wonderful stories and some wonderful things came out and got talked about. And so I thank both groups for letting me be a part of your day for the time that we had together. Last week was the 75th birthday of the United States Air Force. I should have recognized it last program, but I did not. And so I recognize it here. That 75 is not a particularly high number, but of course, ever since we've been flying, we have had military involvement with aviation, and so it goes much farther back. The 75th is the anniversary of the formal founding, which came as a result of the National Defense Act of 1947. I have a number of Air Force friends. One of my friends is no longer on active duty, but she was, among other things, a flight instructor for the Air Force. Particularly difficult and challenging work because you are not only keeping yourself and your student alive, but you're teaching them the basics that they need to stay alive themselves when they get into much more difficult flying situations. The happiest of birthdays to all of my, all of Captain Joe's people from the United States Air Force. Here are a couple of little loving reminders. I was in the ferry queue, the ferry of the frustrated, the other day, and was behind two motor cars. And both of them had the port, which is left. Port is left, starboard is right. The pointy end goes through the water first most of the time. The port aft stoplight, well, the stoplight is always aft. On both of those vehicles, their make and model shall not be disclosed here, were both out. And so I am putting that out because maybe you've not done a light check on your vehicles, and you may have a vehicle which does not automatically tell you that a light is out. On one of my vehicles, the motor car tells me not only that a light is out, but it tells me which one. And then at vast expense, I take it and have it replaced because usually it is one that is buried in the bowels of the front end, which requires some major disassembly to get to it. So if you have a vehicle that it either does not tell you or you have ignored the signals that it's sending to you, Now's the time before we get into the winter time to do a light check. Make sure for that. This is part of watching the six of all the people for whom you are responsible and accountable. The second thing that I'm reminding everybody about, because this was reminded to me, that tires have a finite life. And if you run those tires, even though they have tread left, and you run them past that finite life, they start to crack and they start to leak. And I know this because it just happened to a motor car belonging to a friend of family rank. And we didn't know why the tire was leaking until they did that check and they found that there was leaking through the sidewalls. So that's my second thing. If you have tires that are 35 years old, then they probably, if you think you have a slow leak in them, that may well be where it is. And in any case, especially you drive on winter roads, in any case, you are once again running the risk of serious damage to somebody for whom you are responsible and accountable. And the third thing is something that I have to do after this broadcast, and that is to fill the washer tank. Squirt, squirt, squirt onto the windscreen. So those are my three for today on that subject. And I'm running through my list here. I want to talk briefly about, oh, okay, here we go. Here's one for you. I was trawling through YouTube. A mortal sin. I know it's not something that I should be doing, especially since I have such pejorative feelings about the Andyphone and cellular telephones and things like Facebook, which I've never looked at and I do not have an account for. But what came up was one of the great classic films. And if you want just to feel good about life and so, and a little bit of diversion, take a look at The African Queen with Humphrey Bogart and that wonderful, wonderful actress, Katharine Hepburn. And as we got into it, I've only seen about maybe a third of it so far. I had to shut it down because I had other things to do. And so I'm only about a half or a third of the way through it, but I'm looking forward to the rest of it. It'll make you feel, and I will be fulfilling my mission, which is to make sure that everybody who spends a half hour with me, which has now come to the end, spends a half hour of me, feels just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. And I've now come to the end of my time, which is, as always, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your Captain Joe once again, and as always, and hopefully for a long, long time, because we all have a lot of work to do yet together. We've got children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, do-goods that need our help and our work. So this is your Captain Joe, as always, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly, sending out, as I always do, my special Bravo Zulus. Well done to those of you who deserve it. And if you don't deserve it this week, then pick it up and roll it out, because maybe you'll get on the Bravo Zulu list for next week. Everybody, watch the six of those for whom you're accountable and responsible. Take care.